Live from the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Our mission is to equip you in truth with sound biblical teaching and spiritual discernment as a foundation for experiencing the authentic Christian life through fellowship with God and Christ. To join us on air with your question, dial 888-ASK-HANK, which translates to 888-275-4265. For more information, go online to equip.org. And now, here's your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Again, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265, or contact information on the web, equip.org, via the mail. It's box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. I have had a very, very interesting month. Starting out in early February, I had an emergency appendectomy, and that was followed up last week by starting chemotherapy, as my tumors have returned. And so I am in process of trying to get back into remission. And if that occurs, I'm going to go through an allogenic transplant, meaning I'm going to get the stem cells from someone else, a healthy donor, probably one of my siblings or one of my children. And that'll be more curative in the long run. So looking forward to that. And I mentioned that as prologue to saying that we're very, very close to running out of time for the theology of illness. This has been a transcendently timely book. I hope for you, as it has been for me. I mentioned on a Facebook Live, on the Bible Answer Man Facebook Live page, in a video, I mentioned how this book, for me, has been the balm of Gilead. In fact, I have just gone through my second copy, my first dog-eared, wrinkled, marked up. It is a book that came at exactly the right time in my life. But I think the timing is very good in your life as well. It's so important to understand the origins of illness, to understand the spiritual meaning of illness, and then Christian paths towards healing. Illness can engender spiritual growth. It can engender patience and prayer. And we all face illness. What I'm going through right now is not unusual. From birth, human cells contain the seeds of their own demise. And even when we think we're in good health, the potential of illness lurks within. Our bodies are destined to diminish, to deteriorate, and finally die. Salvation, we often think, comes from medicine. And when we think that salvation comes from medicine as opposed to God using medicine, and that's a qualitative difference, we are so encouraged to make our doctors high priests in the modern epic. So while I'm very, very thankful for the treatments that are available for my disease, I'm also very much aware of the fact that it is God who uses medicine. It is God who creates the healing herbs. It is God that puts us in a situation where we can profit from the medicine available to us for our illnesses today. But remember, there is no elimination of mortality. Accidents, well, they are unforeseeable, and by their sheer number, they recall the effects of past epidemics. So even if you get away with never getting sick, accidents lurk on the horizon, ready momentarily to snuff out life. And so when we think about the origins of illness, we must always remember that God made the body, but he didn't make illness. Just as he made the soul, but by no means did God make sickness, or the sickness of sin in this case. So just as God made the body and didn't make illness, in the same way God made the soul but did not make sin. By choosing to follow the devil's suggestion to become like gods, that is, to become gods apart from God, Adam and Eve deprived themselves of grace. And from that time on, they lost the qualities that would have bestowed on them, in some manner, a supernatural condition. The evils that Adam and Eve endured following their sin were a natural consequence of their voluntary rejection of communion with God, which enabled them to participate in God's properties. And so by separating themselves from the good, they exposed human nature to all kinds of evil. I love in this regard what St. Maximus the Confessor said. If you're not familiar with him, he's one of the great saints of the church. He stood for truth to the extent of having his right hand cut off and his tongue cut out. So he was rendered mute and could no longer write. But he pointed out that man's primary mission was to unite paradise with the rest of the earth and thereby to enable all other created beings to participate in the conditions of paradise. That didn't happen. According to the fathers, men inherit not the sin of Adam itself, but rather we inherit its consequences. It seems reasonable that no one should be punished for anyone or anything other than their own personal sin. And by the way, if you want ample evidence of that, go to Ezekiel chapter 18 and read the chapter. God in myriad ways underscores the truth that a man is not responsible for his son's sin, nor the son for his father's sin, each person responsible for their own sin. St. Cyril of Alexandria said nature fell ill from sin through the disobedience of a single man, Adam. Thereby the multitude of human beings was made sinful, not because they shared Adam's sin, that didn't even exist yet, because they shared his nature which had fallen under the law of sin. And St. Seraphim of Sarov said illness may very well be engendered by the passions, by gluttony, by sexual passions, irascibility, you know, those outbursts of anger, temper. And we need to look at the spiritual meaning of illness as this book does as well. Dostoevsky said, a healthy man is always an earthly material man, but as soon as he falls ill, and the normal earthly order of his organism is disturbed, then the possibility of another world makes itself known to him at once. And as the illness worsens, his relationship with this world becomes ever closer, and that is absolutely the case. Illness focuses you on the life that is to come. I want to end this segment, and we'll go to the calls in the next segment, with a quote from Jean-Claude Larcher, again from The Theology of Illness. If you do not have it, available for your support, check it out on the web at equip.org. Jean-Claude Larcher says this, God wills or at least authorizes, and in any case makes use of illness for man's well-being, to correct within him those things which sin has distorted or perverted, and to heal him of his spiritual ills. Thus, paradoxically, the illness of the body becomes by divine providence a remedy which promotes healing of the soul. And I'll tell you, with the surgery on the soul, you can be almost thankful for bodily illnesses, because God doesn't want to simply heal us physically. He wants to heal the whole of us. We are coming to a station break. Do remember the Theology of Illness, available throughout the remainder of this month. Only a few days left. We'll run out this week. You can check it out on the web at equip.org or write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. When we come back, your calls live right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK.
The Theology of Illness by Jean-Claude Larcher offers renewed hope by addressing the problem of pain in a profoundly theological framework, seeking the answer to the mystery of illness and suffering through the healing touch of Jesus Christ Himself, the physician of our body and soul. To receive a copy of The Theology of Illness for yourself or as a gift to a friend or loved one, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go, on your phone or handheld device, with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day, or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. Dr. Eben Alexander's wildly popular near-death experience book, Proof of Heaven, assures us that no matter what we do in this life, only unconditional love and joy await us in the world to come. But our Lord warned that while the gate to hell is wide, the road to it broad, and those who enter through it are many, the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Your generous support lets Hank Hanegraaff and CRI speak out against the lies that lead to hell. In appreciation for your gift today, we'll rush you Hank's book, Afterlife, What You Need to Know About Heaven, the Hereafter, and Near-Death Experiences, filled with answers to your questions about life after death. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Again, that's equip.org. www.christianresearchinstitute.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you, Randy. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Taking your calls live, we'll go to Paul in Springdale, Arkansas, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Hank. How are you, sir? Blessings to your ministry and also to your medical situation. Very encouraging words. The Holy Spirit brought out the verse, Galatians 2:20. When I was hearing your testimony, and the life I live now, I live through faith in the Son of God. So,
beautiful.
Sir, my question is in a reference to the last chapter of the Gospel of John 21, verse 15, 16, and 17. I've heard many times that the reason why Jesus asked Peter, son of Jonah, do you love me three times, was because he denied him three times. But my question is, can you please explain what was the reason, the commandment for asking Peter in 15, feed my lamb, in 16, tend my sheep, and then in 17, feed my sheep? And with your permission, I'm going to listen to you on the radio, sir. God bless you again. You're in my prayers.
Thank you so much, Paul. I don't know that I can answer that question, because as I have looked at this passage, I haven't seen anything other than those phrases being roughly equivalent, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. Obviously, the intermediate one is tend of my sheep, but I think it's meant to convey the same idea. So Jesus says to Peter, feed my lambs. And then a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, he asked, do you love me? And then Simon says, yes, Lord, you know that I love him. But the love that is being expressed there is considered phileo love, a brotherly love. And Jesus, therefore, continues on to say, tend my sheep. And a third time, Simon, son of Jonah, Jesus asked, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And what the idea that is conveyed the last time would be is that Peter now expresses not a mere brotherly love, but an agape love, a true love for Jesus Christ. And, you know, it was always a temptation for the disciples to see Jesus as a means to their ends, as being the end. You know, they thought that Jesus at first would establish a theocratic kingdom for them again, take them out from under the heel of Rome. So Jesus was often a facilitator to them, but now you see Peter recognizing who Christ is, demonstrating his agape love for Christ, which ultimately will be demonstrated through his crucifixion upside down, as tradition would have it. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Mark in Kalamazoo, Michigan, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I was raised Christian Reformed. Actually, the Dutch Christian Reformed.
We got a lot in common. I was too.
Okay. And my dad does not believe in cremation. So I was just wondering, because they think it's a sin, I was just wondering what your thoughts on cremation and or burial.
Yeah.
What's not a sin?
Well, let me say, first of all, that God can resurrect the cremated just as he can resurrect the buried. So there are emotional or economical or ecological considerations that are very, very compelling today. But I would say that the overall compunction is for burial, because the scriptures clearly favor burial over cremation. In fact, in the New Testament, Paul equates baptism with both burial and resurrection. And this, of course, is seen in Romans chapter 6. Burial symbolizes the promise of resurrection because it anticipates the preservation of the body. Cremation, however, better symbolizes the pagan worldview of reincarnation. So while resurrectionists look forward to the restoration of the body, a reincarnationist looks forward to being relieved from the body. In the Christian worldview, the body is significant, and it's significant because it has numerical identity to the resurrected body. The body that dies is the same body that will be resurrected, and therefore, while God has no problem resurrecting the cremated, as I alluded to earlier, cremation does not pinpoint the resurrection of God, and that's really what we want to do. This is a time, the time of death, in which we can testify to a lost and searching world about the power of resurrection. That the body that is there before you is a body that will be raised immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. It will be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. So we can testify to the power of resurrection. Because one of the things, and of course, Jean-Claude Larcher talks about this in The Theology of Illness, one of the things that we understand as Christians is that there is numerical identity between the body that dies and the body that rises. Now, that does not mean that every single atom is resuscitated. It means that there's continuity. The DNA that makes you you is the DNA that will make you you for all eternity. So there's continuity between the body that is and the body that will be. And again, that's the testimony of burial. And in its Eastern permutation, cremation is not so much about the preservation of the body, but it's an escape from the body. And this is completely antithetical to a Christian worldview. The Christian always believes that we are going to be raised again bodily. So what happens when you die is you're absent the body, present with the Lord. But then when Jesus appears a second time, the soul or the non-physical aspect of your humanity is then reunited with the physical aspect of your humanity, and you're raised immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. Let me go to a Facebook question because I'm thinking this ties in very good. Trevor was asking a question, is Seventh-day Adventism within the pale of Christian orthodoxy? Do you have any information on SDA and the teachings of Ellen G. White? I actually wrote about SDA in my Complete Bible Answer book, but over the years I've encountered many Seventh-day Adventists who have told me that to worship on Sunday is to take the mark of the beast. But far from being monolithic, Seventh-day Adventism is multifaceted. So there are Adventists who are thoroughly orthodox, embrace the essentials of the historic Christian faith. We can debate the secondary issues, but you're united around the essentials for which the martyrs shed their blood. But there are also Adventists who are thoroughly liberal. They not only compromise and confuse and contradict essentials of the Christian faith, like the virgin birth, the bodily resurrection, the infallibility of Scripture, but they completely demythologize the Bible. And then there are traditionalists who major on aberrant Adventist doctrines, including soul sleep, and that's really where I want to hone in for a moment. The issue of soul sleep. Since Seventh-day Adventists are among the most well-known sects currently promoting this idea. From their perspective, the soul of man is indistinguishable from the whole of man, and thus the soul cannot continue to exist consciously apart from the body. But the Bible makes clear the soul is not the whole of the human being. The New Testament unambiguously communicates that the soul continues to have awareness after the body has died. So, for example, in Luke chapter 16, Jesus tells the parable of a rich man and a beggar who die physically yet experience conscious awareness in the intermediate state that I was alluding to earlier. which is a fact difficult to deny, and that the rich man's brothers are living and final judgment has not yet occurred. So sleep is a common biblical metaphor. It's a metaphor for the death of the body. In John 11, you have the clearest example where Jesus tells his disciples, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. And his disciples say, Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better. Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So when Christ told them plainly, Lazarus is dead, you have an example of the Bible speaking of the body asleep in death, conversely, the body never speaking of the soul asleep in death. Much more could be said, but soul sleep has nothing to commend it biblically. As the Bible makes clear, the soul continues to have conscious existence apart from the body that dies. And again, we await the second coming of Jesus Christ when the soul returns to the body and we're raised immortal, imperishable, incorruptible. Out of time for this edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Look forward to tomorrow's broadcast. As always, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. Thanks for standing shoulder to shoulder with me in the battle for life and truth.
Thank you for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you'd like more information about the Christian Research Institute or to order resources, just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or visit equip.org, where you can listen live or download archived broadcasts. Again, that's equip.org. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.